The following programming is sponsored by BFG LLC. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. As the music is playing, we start and keep the music playing. We start with something different today with the craziness that's going on in the world today. Welcome to Conversation Unplugged with Reverend Dr. Wayne M. Weathers and Bishop Kevin Akin. You know, we started out with Michael Jackson today. All I can really say is that they don't really care about us. And that is the subject that we are going to be talking about today. They don't really care about us. How you doing, Bishop Akins? How you doing today, man?
Man, I am doing all right. I am blessed, and I'm excited about what God always has in store for us each and every day. New mercies we see.
Yeah, definitely, man. Definitely, definitely. Hey, before we go any further, man, how's life been treating you since we've been on the air since last week?
Man, life has been treating me well. I feel like $1 million because I still have hope that that is going to come in my life. And so it's just been a blessing, even through the pandemic and everything else. Still new horizons and everything else is happening. So I've been doing well.
Good. You know, I'm still reeling. You know, we're going to get into the subject here. I'm still reeling, man. You know, I was at the homegoing service this past Monday, you know what I mean, of the 12 who transitioned tragically from the fire, you know, 3 adults and 9 children. And so I was asked to do the prayer. You know, Alan Waller, Pastor Alan Waller, you know, Tabernacle Baptist Church did a tremendous job eulogizing and, you know, putting the homegoing services and, you know, things together. Pastor was involved with coordinating with churches, you know, to provide financial donation to the families. I won't go into detail how much was collected and raised. Love the backdrop, how much, you know, was collected and raised. But yeah, so I'm still, you know, spiritually and emotionally reeling from that. Going to the Leah Poor Center in 12 caskets, is white caskets, is in the 12, yeah, is in the Leah Poor Center, the youngest age 2 all the way up to 30 plus. So, you know, we'll definitely keep family in prayer. All right, let's get into it, because we got a lot to get into today.
Yeah,
we got a lot to get into today. So let's start this out. So this was reported April 6, 2017, right? So McConnell used the power of his position with all of his GOP colleagues lined up behind him to essentially change the rules of the Senate to lower the threshold on a Supreme Court nomination to end debate from 60 to 51 votes. So he changed the filibuster. This is April 6, 2017. McConnell changed the filibuster from 60 to 51 votes. The change did not affect the legislative filibuster. McConnell made a point of order that ending the debate on the nomination only requires a simple majority. The motion was not sustained by the chair because Senate rules require 60 votes. So McConnell did made a motion to overturn that ruling. And once the motion passed on a party line vote, Gorsuch's nomination only needed 51 votes to clear the hurdle. Manchin was in office at the time that this was done. Yeah. Manchin raised no opposition. Fast forward here on December 14th, 2021, which was reported on my wife's birthday, turns out that the Senate can make an exception to the filibuster if it wants, reporter wrote. Congress on Tuesday raised the debt ceiling by $2.5 trillion by doing just that. You got me? The Senate avoided a debt default on Tuesday in a unique way. Lawmakers voted 50 to 49 to raise the debt limit by $2.5 trillion, a figure that's accepted to tide the government over until after the midterm election next fall. Every 1 to 2 years, it's vital for the United States to address the debt ceiling to cover the past spending and make sure that the government does not default. If it did, it would likely have catastrophic economic consequences globally. Hear this, Bishop. Interesting. The resolution succeeded because it did not require 60 votes to clear filibuster in the Senate after the lawmakers passed the bill last night, Thursday, guaranteeing one-time exception to the rule. The deal, please listen to this, the deal to suspend the filibuster was bipartisan. They suspended the filibuster, it was bipartisan. Leaders of both parties have hesitated to make exceptions to the filibuster, a procedural rule requiring a Senate majority to pass legislation if it gets blocked by the opposition. Senators were willing to make an exception in this case for two reasons. So they made a case to suspend the filibuster, right, to pass the debt ceiling. Ah, my blood pressure's rising on this one. Now, fast forward. The last chance for federal legislation to stem the tide of a Republican state-level attack on the franchise died this week, with Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema rejected a bid by the Senate Democrat majority to change the filibuster rules to allow passage of two voting rights bills. The Freedom to Vote Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Act would together serve to establish a baseline of federal rules enabling access to the ballot in all 50 states and have a history of racist restriction, civil rights era provisions that was gutted by Republican-controlled Supreme Court. But the two bills have been locked repeatedly by Senate Republicans who have used the chamber's supermajority rule to prevent them from coming to a vote. So why is it in 2017 there was no problem with suspending the filibuster to pass the nomination of Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court? Why is it that they can suspend the filibuster in order to pass the debt ceiling? But when it comes to Black and brown voters to ensure that we have access to vote, all of a sudden, they can't suspend the filibuster, and that is including Manchin and Sinema. Bishop, talk to me.
No surprise. No surprise. I mean, as much as we get to the point of taking a step forward, we already have to prepare that there's going to be two steps that we must take backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say this based on Black and brown people, you know, for history, it's been so much of a struggle. And we're still in the same point that when we are actually on the horizon or when we are actually in a place where I would say the weight in a sense can actually move our way. There's always going to be a struggle. There's always going to be a fight. There's always going to be some form, you know, to put up. I think Raphael kind of put it in a sense, you know, a senator, where he's saying we're still in 1965 and haven't crossed the bridge yet.
Hmm.
And that's important when we get to trying to be at that point. We are still at a standoff. We're mm-hmm. still at the foot of the bridge. We're still trying to figure it out how we can cross over. We have not crossed that bridge. And we're in a place where we're dealing with history and where the power struggle, I would say it that way, and the divide that is in the House, it is still the same thing, but another day.
Wow. It's still the same thing, but another day. You know, in this introduction, right, in less than a couple of hours, I was able to pull research that in 2017, Mitch McConnell was willing to suspend the filibuster to get Gorsuch passed. You got me? Mm-hmm. In 2021, they suspended the filibuster in order to get debt ceiling passed. But the Democrats have ineffectively how can I say, provided to the media as well as to the viewers within the news in a constructive or a constructive argument against Mitch McConnell, as well as Sinema, as well as Manchin. How is it that we haven't seen any advertisement, publication, et cetera, that can show the hypocrisy, not only in Mitch McConnell, but the hypocrisy in Manchin? Because Sinema, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't in office at the time. The fact that the hypocrisy with Manchin as well as McConnell, that they were willing to pass, check this out, or suspend the filibuster to get Gortrich, you know, nominated, as well as suspend the filibuster for debt ceiling. And then they have the gall to say they want to keep the filibuster in place and then scold the Democrats for not being willing to compromise. You know, I don't think the Democrats have really framed a strong argument against what it is that McConnell was doing as well as Manchin.
No, they haven't. I think they're still, again, always going to be this pull and this struggle. And I think what's happening is we're seeing the tides change, and we're seeing those that understand whatever injustices have occurred. You know, whatever injustices that have occurred, we're seeing that we do have, and we are gaining some momentum moving forward, where if we have some that's rallying around the efforts. And mm-hmm. one have to say that the effort, what we talked about last week, when we talked about the president moving into a position where he's right in the heat of battle, him as well as vice president, when they were in Atlanta, and they were, he gave his speech, what have you, to address some of these areas, and was kind of sick and tired in a sense. So we do see that there is some step forward in momentum to address and stand up for, but we have a long road that we have to travel. And I think we're seeing it now manifest itself to the point where it's a long fight, and it's been a long fight. Right. And again, as I mentioned, still, we're at the foot of the bridge, and there are still clubs, there are still hoses, and there are still dogs that are there that is stationed to keep us from actually crossing that bridge.
So let's do this. We have a caller on, I believe that's Pastor Bill Moore. Welcome to Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM as well as WWE 1100 AM, The Real, Atlanta, Georgia.
Yes. Thank you, Dr. Weathers. How are you today?
Hey, Pastor Bill Moore, Tiff Memorial Baptist Church. How are you doing today? Hey, our subject they don't really care about us. Manchin and Sinema, express to us your thoughts about what's going on in this whole thing about not adjusting the filibuster to pass voter reform.
Yeah, well, thanks to Mr. and Mrs. Bull Connor that we're at this point. It is just ironic that we are in power, but we're not in charge. And it is unfortunate because Senator Manchin and Sinema have chosen to go in the opposite direction. They are Democrats. Dressed up in a Republican heart, and that's where their sentiments are. Now, with respect to changing the filibuster, they just made a carve out recently. Mm-hmm. If your listening audience can remember, they made a carve out to raise the debt ceiling, and yes. They received bipartisan support to do that. And if you can remember, you and your listening audience, you remember when the Republicans were in charge of the Senate, Mitch McConnell took the position, well, he had taken the position prior that the president in office should get to nominate their own Supreme Court nominee choices. If one became vacant, they should at least have the privilege to nominate them. But in 2016, he blocked Merrick Garland, whom President Obama had nominated to go on the Supreme Court. He also made an exception with the last two Senate nominees, where we were right up to the election, I believe, and put the last two Senate nominees that were nominated on the court, and they were confirmed. So that, and he has done this before. And if the Senate flips, and I hope that it does not, he has not committed to, of course, President Biden would still be in office, and he has not committed to advancing a nominee if he's in charge. So that obviously they do what they want to do if it is in their, and when and if it's in their self-interest. And I don't see why Democrats cannot do the same thing. And of course, you never know where Senator Manchin stands, because every time something comes up, he finds a different way to change his mind. So he's always moving the goalposts. And from what I can understand, my understanding of the change, that they did not want to do away with the filibuster, which is ridiculous, because in a sense it gives them, well, not ridiculous, because it gives the minority in a sense to have that say on the floor. And in that sense, it's good. But then when it blocks things that are in the best interest of the American people, it is not good. And from what I can understand, they did not want to do away with it. The only change that they wanted to make is a very minor change and a very sensible change. And that is, and it would certainly conform with what the Manchin and Sinema said that they wanted to do, that it simply would say that if a member took the floor, they would have to speak on the issue that was on the floor. And when everyone had had their say that was scheduled to get on the floor, then they could call for a vote on the bill. And right. That's the only change that they wanted to make, which is a very simple change. So you get to accomplish two things. Members get the chance to talk on things that's on the floor. They can get up there and talk about their favorite wife's recipe and all this other kind of stuff they do sometimes. They have to talk to the bill that's at hand. And when that is done, you call for a vote. And that's the only change that they wanted to make. And I don't see why Senator Manchin and Senator, the lady, why they disagree with that. And it is unfortunate that we are in power, but because of those two, we're not in charge. And then they say, too, that they are for voting rights. And when you look back over Republican and Democratic administration, maybe back as far as Reagan, both of the Bushes, Clinton and Obama, it was voted on and never had any problem. I know one year that they voted on it, no one voted against it. So it shows that they can do what they want to when they want to. But obviously, if you are for voting rights, then you also have to be for anything that prevents that vote from taking place, or even making it hard to take place, so that they have not looked at some of these things that have been done and realistic about it. And that is, you know, when people are standing in lines, long lines, as they did the last time, because our people, you out there and a lot of other pastors were out there getting people to vote, and they see that made a difference. The drop boxes, and even in the predominantly black county in Texas, they are taking up all of the drop boxes, which does not make sense. That's just like saying we're going to take up all of the mailboxes and you're going to have to go to the post office if you want to mail a letter. I mean, that's just how ridiculous it is, that you can't give people food if they're standing in line. So all of these things are just crazy, And what they have seen, Dr. Weathers, is the fact that going back to former President Obama, and of course the most recent election, where there was a high turnout of black voters that put President Obama in office twice, that also put the President Biden in office, and they're trying to make it difficult for him to do their job. And so thanks to Mr. and Mrs. Bull Connor, they are standing in the way of progress and destroying democracy.
So, you know, Pastor Moore, it's I'm glad you gave such a great analysis of this whole concept, you know, this whole concept of blocking the filibuster and things of that nature. You know, you're a theologian, I'm a theologian, Bishop Akins is a theologian. The Bible says a tree is known by the fruit it produces. You can't tell me that you're for voting rights and you see a lie that's been orchestrated. And from that lie, you see voter suppression bills that is sweeping our country. And you see the impact that it's having on black and brown individuals here in America. You can't tell me you support voter rights and yet want to hold the filibuster in check, but yet you supported the filibuster for the, you supported adjusting the filibuster for the debt ceiling. When Manchin was in office, when they adjusted the filibuster to get Gortrich confirmation passed for the Supreme Court, Manchin never opposed it. He never said we need to have compromise. We need to have bipartisanship. And so Republicans, I am not going to support this because this creates division. But now you want to use this whole concept of unity and division as a way of supporting your ideological beliefs. And your ideological beliefs are you do not want black and brown people to have the right to vote. That's the bottom line. Sinema. Right. And Manchin does not want to allow black and brown people to have equal rights to vote. Before you go, Pastor Moore, I have another call on the line. I just want to read this because there's something that's burning right now in the media. Mitch McConnell comments reported by Newsweek magazine. Mitch McConnell comments comparing African Americans and Americans spark outrage. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell, this is reported on January 20th, 2022. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell has sparked a fierce backlash for a comment where he distinguished between African-American voters and Americans. He says, during the debate, McConnell had accused the Democrats of fake hysteria over the Senate filibuster in order to pass legislation. News reporter asked McConnell what his message was for voters of color who are concerned about their voting rights ahead of November's midterm election. McConnell's response is, well, the concern is misplaced. Please listen to this. Because if you look at statistics, African-American voters are voting in just as high a percentage as Americans.
Oh, yeah.
He is a very interesting character, and even if that were true, it certainly would not be true if they continue to be allowed to move forward without some federal sanctions, and also the courts. You remember it was the Chief Justice who said in doing away with the voter right protection that we have moved past this point. In other words, he said we did not need them. But I think it is plain, pure, and simple before us that we see it. And what Mitch McConnell sees is that it's all about money and power, and particularly power first, that if he's in charge, he can frustrate the rules and do whatever he wants to do. And what he says, what he wants to put out is another lie, is that we are voting at a great percentage. When we look at the fact that we have 20% of the eligible black and brown voters who are eligible to vote are not registered to vote, and the Latino unregistered voters are in the same way. But he sees that when we come together with the Latino community, with our community, and we vote what is in our best interest, that it means that they are not in power. And so he's spreading another lie right along beside Trump's lie of voter fraud, just trying to get us to believe something that is absolutely not true. What is the truth is that when we vote, and we vote in large numbers, and we don't vote in as large numbers as we need to, but it goes to show that when we do vote and we get a good coalition of votes, that they're not in power. So I don't believe that narrative that he's putting after one iota.
Wow. Well, thank you for calling in, Pastor Bill Morton from Memorial Baptist Church. Take care and God bless. We got another caller on. Caller. Caller, introduce yourself. I'm not at the studio live. I'm still, you know, maintaining this COVID quarantine until maybe next week or the week after next. Who we have on the line?
Yeah, this is Yusuf Jackson.
Hey, Minister Yusuf, Spiritual Connect Radio. Blessing Black in the morning, Monday through Thursday on www.spiritualconnectradio.com. Hey, man, what's your comment for the day? Our subject is they don't really care about us. Mansion and cinema. What's your comment for the day?
Oh, man. Well, I just heard you quoting Mitch McConnell. And it appears like he has separated Black voters from American voters. So we're not Americans. We're somebody different. Or is he implying that we're lesser than Americans, or, you know what I mean? So this,
I would
this
say
is kind
if,
of crazy.
If this was an SAT question, I would say all of the above.
Yes, sir.
And let me give proper homage. Wow. My wife introduced me to that comment because I didn't even know it was buzzing. And she did a comment on Facebook Live. So after this caller gives a comment, I'm going to address the comment that my wife made on Facebook Live. But as my wife and I were talking prior to us getting ready to broadcast, she told me about the comment because I've just been, you know, detached from watching the news because I'm dejected over the fact that you got two Democrats, you know, that's willing to stop the advancement of Black and brown people from voting. Now, Trump and his craziness, you got me. I am not a Trump supporter. I'm not a Trump fan. I believe Trump's a racist, et cetera. And I say that for the record. But the one thing I'll give Trump and the Republicans credit for, when Trump was in office, he can be loud and wrong, but they all lined up behind him. And they're still lining up behind him. Even in the wrongness, they're lining up behind him. But yet, you got Democrats, right, who are not lining up behind right. And let's get real, Sinema as well as Manchin would not be in a position to exercise power if Black and brown people didn't come out and vote to help the Democrats have the majority that they have right now.
Right, right. I hope the voters remember this, you know, when it comes time to vote for those seats, you know. But one thing that I think has happened is I think our society has moved to a place where integrity is no longer a thing. Right. So, because, like, for example, me being involved in sports, right, as an older teenager or young adult, it seemed like this idea became popular, and this quote became popular, which was, if you're not willing to cheat, you're not serious about winning. Right? That became like the mantra. That became like the thing. Like, you know, it became acceptable in sports.
Right.
It became acceptable to say, if you're not willing to cheat, you're not serious about winning. So it's more about winning than about getting there or doing the right thing for the sake of doing the right thing, right? Or being right for the sake of being right. It's more about winning and more about, you know, it's more about the goal than how you get there. And that became acceptable. So to me, it seemed like that same ideology became acceptable. Because at one time, politics was seen as something, you know, like, you know, the White House was seen as like almost something sacred. You know, we were always loyal to the seat, not to the person. So no matter who's in the seat, we still respect the post. So we still respect the president. We still respect the person in the office. So those days are gone. You know what I mean? Now I think the mentality is, you know, if we got to cheat, steal, lie, pay people off, you know, do whatever we got to do to push our agenda. That's what we're going to do. There's no more integrity. There's no more doing what's right. If we got to, you know, strip people of their rights, if we got to strip people of, you know, of their liberties, whatever we got to do for our team to win, that's what we're going to do. You know what
wow.
I mean? So it's this spirit in America that I think maybe wasn't here 20 years ago. You know what I mean? That is, there's no more integrity. It's about my team winning. And it don't matter at what cost for your team. When really we're all should be on the same team. You know what I mean? Because, you know, I mean, because like the world is looking at us as a country and they're laughing and people who are enemies from afar, they are becoming emboldened and they are uniting against us. So,
yeah.
You know what I mean, you can't win a war on two fronts.
No.
So we are vulnerable to the world right now.
Yeah, I was like, Bishop, what's your thoughts about what Minister Yusuf Jackson has just shared? And we got another call on the line also. Yeah, what's your thoughts about what Minister Yusuf Jackson just shared?
You know, I was, of course, I'm an avid history buff in a sense when it comes to where we have come from. Man, I see this as the same stuff. You know, we have been around the corner. I think Minister Yusuf, I think he brings up a great point in this generation. As we begin to look at, you know, what's happening, what's going on. But for those of us that pay attention to history or the area of a political rush and all those different things, we'll see a pattern of struggle, a pattern of trying to have a voice, a pattern of fighting, a pattern of the enslaved mentality, mm-hmm. the pattern of psychological slavery, emotional
right.
slavery, physical slavery. I mean, and so again, as I mentioned about really where we are, we can say we've come a long way in one regard, and in the other regard, we say we're continuing to move at a snail's pace. And moving forward, we just celebrated a birthday, Martin Luther King, and we really dealing with, of course, the areas that which he had been to fight in and what he actually stood for. We are still fighting that same fight. I mean, this is there's nothing new under the sun. And so when we look at, you know, what will we do or the other side do to win, I would agree that they're still the same stuff that's happening.
Yeah. So, Minister Yusuf, we got another call on. Thank you for chiming in on Conversational Plug. Do me a favor, man. If you could share
sure.
this particular show on your Facebook page, you got me? So that we can
okay.
let's educate our brothers and sisters about the craziness of they don't really care about us, you know, man to the cinema, you know. We're Bible-believing individuals, Bible practitioners. You know, I quoted earlier, so
sure.
the tree is known by the fruit that they produce. You know, we also
right.
warn, watch out, wolves dressed in sheep's clothing. Watch out for Democrats dressed in Republican clothing. Thank you for tuning in on Conversation Unplugged, all right? Reverend Shaw, Reverend Shaw. Hey, how you doing, Reverend Shaw?
I'm doing great, thank you. And good afternoon, Pastor Weathers and Bishop Aiken.
Good afternoon.
You know, I find myself like Bishop Aiken because I too pay attention to politics and the process. And here again, this does not surprise me. This is a well-crafted plan directed
yeah.
to the midterm election. And it's designed in a way to make it appear, and to some degree it's true, that there is division in the party. And sometimes what happens when you do that, it causes people distress to the point of saying, if they can't get along or figure this out in their own party, I'm not going to vote. And that's
right.
why having such a small margin in the Senate is a problem. The other thing that I see is that if this goes on unchallenged, and if we don't put, you know, boots to the ground and get people to the polls, we're going to see just what the Republican Party wants to see, and that is limited voting, limited participation on the part of black and brown people. And it's going to create for them, at least in their minds, they're hoping, a greater majority in the Senate. So we need to be very careful not only to pay attention to this, but watch the direction that it's really going in. So thank you so much. That's my comment for today.
Hey, thank you for calling, Reverend Shaw. Thank you for, and I'm going to ask you to do what I asked Minister Houston to do. If you could take this broadcast and share it on your Facebook page also. We want to educate, form, and mobilize, you know, what has been done to black and brown people by those who are in the, they are in the Democratic Party. You know, Manchin and Sinema are Democrats and would not be in a position of power if it wasn't for black and brown people. My prediction is after this election, I'm quite sure Sinema is not, but I believe Manchin is going to, is going to switch parties, become an independent, and start siding with Republicans. That's
I agree with you. That's why I would say, when you say he's a Democrat at this point, and I'm not trying to be cynical, just honest, in name only.
Right. Remember that scripture says, watch out for, I may have had that backwards. Watch out for wolves in sheep's clothing.
Hey!
Right? Yeah, watch out for wolves in sheep's clothing. I'm gonna flip that in a secular sentence and say, "Watch out for Democrats and Republican clothing."
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This is what we're gonna do. We haven't taken a station break yet. We're gonna take a 30-second station break on Conversation Unplugged on WWDB 860 AM and WWWE 1100 AM, The Real Atlanta, Georgia. 30-second station break.
You're listening to Conversation Unplugged on WWDB with Reverend Dr. Wayne and Weathers, brought to you by Lancaster Bible College, Capital Seminary, and Graduate School. LBC Philadelphia location has programs for busy working adults in accounting, business, Bible, communication, ministry, community transformation, and social engagement, human services, criminal justice, healthcare management, and more. Connect with LBC and Capital Seminary today by visiting lbc.edu/philly or call 215-280-6300.
We're back on WWDB 860 AM Philadelphia, WWWE 1100 AM The Real Atlanta, Georgia. We're with Reverend Dr. Wayne M. Weathers and Bishop Kevin Akins on Conversation Unplugged. Bishop, I'm probably the next station break. I'm probably going to ease up and go into my little corny mode right now, but I'm really irate right now, and I really don't have any humor in my bag right now to be humorous. My wife chimes in on Facebook Live, a couple of comments. She says, earlier, about 14 minutes ago, and then she just commented a minute ago. 14 minutes ago, my wife stated, they are afraid of us exercising the power that comes with the vote. And that what happened here in the past election, Georgia got flipped, right? Judo flip, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, mixed martial arts flip, you got me? Arizona got flip, mixed martial arts flip, Brazilian jiu-jitsu flip. It got flipped.
Yeah.
And let's get real. They almost lost Florida. The Cuban vote tilted the election because of the propaganda that the Republicans placed on Biden, that, you know, tying him to, what's that, communism and things like that. But the Florida vote was very close also. Right. And so now they want to ensure through Trump's lies, you change legislations based on a lie. It's really not a lie. You're using a lie to justify why you want to suppress black brown voters. You know, why you want to suppress black brown voters. My computer just went off. My notebook just went off. There we go. I'm sorry. My notebook just went off because I need to get the next comment that my wife made. And I'm going to get to it in a few minutes. But yeah, but you know, the Brazilian jiu-jitsu flip and everything that occurred with this voter suppression and stuff like that, they just don't want to see African-Americans vote at an all-time high. But here's the stupidity, Bishop, and I'm going to get your comment. I'm going to try to get my notebook back up. Here's the stupidity. When you restrict black brown voters from the polls, they are determined to come out in record numbers. So you're not suppressing us. You're just motivating us.
Oh, yeah.
You're not suppressing us. You're just motivating us. Share your thoughts, man.
I think that's just the history of survival. And I think that, you know, throughout history, that's exactly how we have responded in the midst of adversity. You know, it's almost like when you say we can't, we say we can.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and the importance of, and let's go back and just kind of look at really the fractures that have occurred. I know we talked about, you know, the parties. We're talking about parties, Democratic, right. Republican parties. We are talking about issues that happen within the party. We're talking about issues that, you know, we have that are on the list of priorities and discussions. Going back to support, and I think you made something, and I don't want to vary here, but I want to come back to this point because you made a point and you talked about, and I don't know if you made a point or Minister Youssef made this point when it talks about the supports that the Republicans have, right. Even if their leader is wrong. They have supported the wrongness,
yes,
of that. Now, mm-hmm. I will say this because, you know, this is a discussion that I think I'm going to kind of throw out there. And if we have any callers that will call in, you know, based on that want to chime in for this discussion, that the question I would have to say is, are we still dealing with majority rule?
Mm.
And the reason why I'm using that, because majority rule deals with the legislations for especially of the Democratic nations.
Right.
Dealing with, it's the majority rule. When we deal with as far as voting, it's the majority votes, of course, and that's the rule. Majority rule really deals with, of course, the fact that the party as a whole,
mm-hmm.
based on the decisions that is being made, it is the influential decision of the body, the making of the body. And so in the discussion, when you do have, I want to say spoiler alerts,
right,
that are happening, we have to look at that and really kind of be aware that those things do occur, those things do happen, and there is a spoiler alert when you're talking about party. We do know that there are people that may not necessarily, you know, agreed with the way the handling of was the previous administration based on party, but as you mentioned, the party got together and continued to band together and unite themselves to vote or to keep and uphold, you know, many of the challenges that they had throughout the term, because there were some things that the administration were doing that was questionable based on upholding the White House,
right.
The major office, the leading office. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at that and where we are, and we find out that the vote from 51 to 48, in favor, you know, of Republicans, and there's a hold. We're really talking about spoiler alert, and we're also talking about it's majority rule within the parties is also something that seems like is going out the window.
Yeah, there's a comment here, a couple comments. You said something I want to piggyback on, and then I want to just read these comments. I have to cut you off. You said spoiler alert. The problem here, man, you know, Bishop, is we're the ones getting the spoiled milk. You know, spoiler alert, we're getting the spoiled milk. It's like the Democrats play punk politics. Maybe that's an offensive word, but my frustration level has just, you know, the mercury in my thermometer has just exploded. They play punk politics. It's always walking on eggshells, how can we get along, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They get in office and they do this, you know, when they get the majority, they continue to do the same thing over and over and over. Republicans are more business minded. You know, When we won, we celebrated, went to sleep. They lost, they didn't go to sleep, they regrouped. They already had a plan in place. If we win, we'll enact this. If we lose, we'll go in this direction. When they lost the election, they threw out the narrative about, you know, the vote was stolen, the election was stolen from us, and then they started to do the other crazy stuff. They already had a plan in place. They had a plan A and a plan A. They didn't have a plan A or a plan B. They had a plan A. Let me take that back. They had a plan E and a plan E. Plan E, this is what we're going to execute, right, if we win. Plan E, this is what we're going to execute if we lose. There was no plan A or plan B. It was a plan E, execute.
Right.
And Weather says, we need to come out and force during the midterm election, no matter how long the line, bring your own water and one for your neighbor in line. Well, in Georgia, to my understanding, you can't even bring no water for your neighbor in line. That's how suppressed the voting law is. You got me? And then Pastor Ron, Pastor Fontel, you know, basically says, good afternoon, Robert Fontel. So, hey, Pastor Fontel, God bless you. But, Reverend Weather says, come on, this community says, the question is, what is our plan? That's exactly correct. What is our plan? Yeah. Right now, there is no plan, because if there is a plan, it would have been shared. And the plan normally is not announced, or you don't bring people together until you're in a crisis.
Republicans
didn't wait until the midterm election to start their stuff. They started their stuff right after the election. And my wife would testify to this. So we're coming from Canada, and I shared this with Black clergy. We're coming from Canada, right? And Waze took us down some back roads.
I'll
tell you now, we would not go to the restroom. You got me? We would not go to the restroom in the places that they were taking us. That's how, I'm telling you, that's how uncomfortable we felt. And we come out, I think it was either Williamsport or McKeesport, whatever that district, we're riding into the residential district. And as we're riding, the Trumpsters got their signs up. You got me? They were mobilizing. This was September of 2021. They were already mobilizing. Bishop?
Oh, yeah.
They were already mobilizing. We're just coming to the, Democrats are just coming to the table now and mobilizing. Coming to the table now, mobilizing. Let's do this. Let's go on a quick 30-second station break conversation and plug. We're going to regroup, and then we're going to lower the temperature. Station break this time.
You're listening to Conversation Unplugged on WWDB with Reverend Dr. Wayne and Weathers, brought to you by Lancaster Bible College, Capital Seminary, and Graduate School. LBC Philadelphia location has programs for busy working adults in accounting, business, Bible, communication, ministry, community transformation, and social engagement, human services, criminal justice, healthcare management, and more. Connect with LBC and Capital Seminary today by visiting lbc.edu/philly or call 215-280-6300.
We're back in Conversation Unplugged, WWDB 860 AM in the city of Philadelphia, WWWE, the real 1100 AM in Atlanta, Georgia. On a 30-second station break, I was able just to lower the blood pressure. You know, I had to lower the blood pressure. Probably have to take me a couple of extra blood pressure pills because, you know, I was amped when I came on. And something hit me, Bishop. You know, the show is entitled, They Don't Really Care About Us. When did self-care fall on the shoulders of somebody caring about us?
Right.
We don't need them to care about us.
Mm-hmm.
We can take this and get motivated to say, okay, all right, you don't want to pass filibuster? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to remember it.
Yeah.
We're going to expand the Senate, come out and vote. Even though they're trying to suppress the vote, we're going to come out in record numbers
in
2022. And then we're going to mobilize and vote you out of office, even if it means losing a blue seat in West Virginia, because we're really not losing a blue seat. You're just a blue seat operating as if it's red. So we're not really losing anything in West Virginia. Cinema is that is a whole nother story. And I'm glad that the donors who donated to her campaign are at a point now that they want their money back.
Yeah.
They want their money back.
I think the biggest thing, Dr. Weathers, is the plan. And I think we need to, if we're looking at the problem, we always have to identify what the problem is. And then we have to kind of deal with, okay, well, what's the solution? You know, what are we going to do about what's happening? Because truth be told, you know, that, you know, we will have those political struggles. History does approve that. When we look at it, it's something that has happened every term. There's always going to be, my agenda, what's your agenda, and all that kind of stuff. And we do know that. I mean, you know, we have seen this before. Parents have seen it. Grandparents have seen it. Those that are still in the grave, you know, if they're rolling over, they say, you know, it's still happening. So at the end of the day, you want to get to the point of kind of as we're dealing with this idea of boots on the ground. What does that mean? That really means that we have to attack it, you know, from a different perspective. It's from the bottom up, not the top down. Mm-hmm. Bottom up, boots on the ground means that we need those that are observing the fiascos that happen, you know, on the television shows and the news medias and everything else, then we can discuss it, we can talk about it, and I'll say this, no pun intended, we can unplug it. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing that we need to do is look at the solution and gather leaders within the community to start really moving the narrative of our voting like they did in the past. How did they handle this in the past? So you always want to look at really, how do we respond? We respond with our voice. We respond with our feet going to what we respond, gathering the information. We respond going to neighborhood. We respond not house to house, getting it out, you know, that we need to vote, and we need that because it's the vote of the people. Okay. You know, when you look at where we are based on a democracy, it is the vote of the people. And so when we're looking at what do we do, we're looking at solution. Solution is that we observe what's happening. Capitol Hill, we observe exactly what's going on. Mm-hmm. But then we have a strategic plan from the ground up. And that's where we begin to start changing the narrative in a sense. You know, history says, of course, what did they do in the past? Man, they got together, the clergy got together, community leaders got together, and they had rallies. They had different things that they discussed based on enough is enough. That's what we really need to do. We need to get organizations that have leaders of influence that'll be able to go in and have conversation to say, this is how we need to embrace the authority and the power that we have so that we're not just having a discussion about it. We're literally moving forward and making some things happen.
Bishop, you're absolutely correct. And what you're saying is what is called grassroots organizing.
That's it.
I'm coming from the bottom up. We cannot, and let's get real, I think, and I could be wrong, I think we have relied on political parties to do what it is that we've been accustomed to do.
Oh yeah.
And there are some in the political parties that, as my wife and I were talking this morning, you know, they really don't want, they're just, how can you say, they just want to touch the surface.
Yeah.
Cosmetically, they want to be seen like they're for the people. But they just want to get in office and they really don't want to touch folks living within the community. And what I share with my wife, you know, you have to observe everybody and learn from everybody, right? Mm-hmm. So what Trump has pumped into the community is poison. You got me?
Right.
It's poison. But the poison that he's pumping, they think it's real in their community to the point that Trump has met people where they are. That's why they're galvanized. And hold that thought. Pastor Rob Fontel said, Bishop, that's a great idea, grassroots organizing, let's do it. Pastor Fontel, I'll be in contact with you because I'm working on something. Trust
Pastor
me.
Fontel, that's my friend.
Yeah, Pastor Fontel, trust me, I'm already working on something. Not me alone, but I have a meeting at 2:30 and I'm already at the cusp. You know I'm in the cusp of working on, Bishop, but I'm just not going to announce it probably until about 2 or 3 weeks from now.
Yeah.
But there's something that I'm, huh?
Let me say this about Pastor Fontel. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to be on, when we were playing football, we used to be on the opposite ends of the field. But now we're on the same team, so we can kind of come together and run the ball together.
That's like Dell State, North Carolina Central University. Oh, was that high school y'all used to play?
No, it's high school, man. High school. Yeah. Wow. We go back and, it's good to be on the same team now, you know, and not the opposing team. And that is good, for that.
But let me say this as we get ready to unplug the show now. But you just said something, because the way the system is designed is basically keep us to be against each other. You got
right,
me?
Right.
You know,
right,
keep right. us against each other, not for us to be working together. And then the way the system is, they won't call people like you and I to the table. They always just call people who they think have influence, and the people who they think got influence really don't have influence. You got right. me? It's the people right. who have smaller congregations who, and don't get me wrong, there are those who have mega congregations that has influence. I was just working with Pastor Alan Waller when we were working with, the fire victims and everything. He's doing a great job. So I give kudos to Pastor Alan Waller and Bishop Reed. You got me, Sharon yep. Baptist Church, yep. Bishop yep. Reed. But there's others that they reach out to that they understand that, you tend to reach out to folks you think they got a lot of members, but you fail to realize those who got 100 and less is just as influential in the community as those who got 10,000 members. And what these politicians right. do is they rather focus on the ones who have major congregations, and then they don't even focus on the one that may be small. And that's what Trump does. He reaches out to the folks who nobody would consider right. would be important.
That's right.
And they see him as one of them because he's willing to reach out and touch them. And right. that's one of the failures of the Democratic Party. They don't reach out and touch the common people. They don't reach the common people, whether you're urban, rural, or suburban. And then you leave it up to QAnon and others to feed them this false poison of a gourmet meal that make them think that they're somebody.
That's right.
Wow, we got to unplug now. We got to unplug, man. And I got to take my blood pressure medication because I was real amped up and hyped today.
Yeah.
I was real amped up and hyped today. So, Bishop, we'll probably be broadcasting one more time virtually at home. And then we'll go back. I'll go back into the station the first Thursday in February. All right. Yeah. We're unplugging now. Thank you for tuning in to Conversation Unplugged. Thank you for tuning in to Conversation Unplugged. They don't care about us, but we care about us. We're going to show up in November and show them, and in the primary, how much we really care. So we're unplugging now to plug back in next Thursday. If God allows us to have breath in the body, let's come back next Thursday and continue to unplug as we educate, inform, and mobilize. Thank you for tuning in to Conversation Unplugged.
Thank you.
Join Eric Cavanaugh for